I'm Jeannie Allen, and this is Reality Check.
Reality Check with Jeannie Allen is produced by National Review and is one of more than a dozen podcasts offered on the National Review online website. If you'd like a free subscription to the podcast so that you never miss a program, simply sign up at iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or TuneIn. And now, here's Jeannie Allen.
And welcome to Reality Check. I'm Jeannie Allen. My guest on this edition is the fabulous Lisa Graham Keegan, who today serves as CEO of the Arizona Chamber Foundation. But most importantly, while that's a fantastic job we'll talk about in just a second and how she helps business, community people, parents, and leaders throughout the state, how Lisa is actually truly a pioneer and a visionary who created and defended and to this day advocates for what is one of the most robust education opportunity and innovation movements in the country, in the great state of Arizona. Lisa was a state representative and following that an elected state superintendent, where she fought successfully for great public charter schools, tuition tax credits, revising the student finance formulas, and standards and accountability. Lisa, we remember before it was cool.
Way before.
So thank you so much for joining me, Lisa.
I'm so happy to be here, Jeannie. And people may not know and probably don't know. Why would they know that you and I probably met when we were 12 and used to have conference calls with all seven people in the country who were wound up about education reform with our children on our laps, and those boys are almost 30.
It's so hard to believe. I know. And even when I read your fabulous book, Simple Choices, Thoughts on Choosing Environments That Support Who Your Child is Meant to Be, a great book that I'd commend to all of you. And it is linked on our website, as is Lisa's bio. When I read that, I remember thinking, oh my gosh, she's talking about her adult kids. How is this possible?
I know. I wondered the same thing.
Well, you know, and it's interesting. So that's a great segue into one of the millions of reasons I wanted to talk with you. And I just know walking into 30 minutes that we're going to need to spend another 30 successive times in the future. You were incredibly inspired by what your kids and other kids around the country were going through. And I'm wondering, as we sit here today in 2018, far from the early 90s when a lot of this stuff first launched, and by stuff, I mean changes to status quo to really focus on students and families. What do you think's changed? Where are we today? And what have we achieved?
Well, oh gosh, the small question, right? Well, first of all, Jeannie, I truly believe that my view of what's possible is so warped by being blessed to live in Arizona. So I always have to give this caveat to people because, as you know well, and you've spent a lot of time with us and helped us grow our movement in Arizona, Arizona is an entrepreneurial place. It's why it's so much fun to work at the Chamber Foundation. People love to invent the next thing in Arizona. And so we don't have a lot of constraints around that other people have. You know, a lot of the regulation that grows up around any business, but particularly education. And we have a mindset that says, you know what, if there's a better idea, why do we not do that thing anymore? And while it's not easy, it's more likely to happen in Arizona than in a lot of other places. So now, in 2018, we are on the precipice of really seeing massive growth, annual growth in the number of students who have access to an exceptionally high-quality school. We have, in Maricopa County, Jeannie, which is Phoenix, the Phoenix area, less than half of families go to their assigned school.
Wow.
It's unbelievable. And it's why anymore it's really hard for those of us in Arizona who are doing policy work to sustain and expand this movement.
Right.
It's hard for us to speak to anybody nationally. And you and I could do a whole series of things about our frustration. But I don't want to get off on that right now because I do want to talk about it later. But in Arizona, what is true for us is just not true elsewhere. And so we are used to needing to invent the next thing for us.
Well, you know, it's so interesting you say that is, like you, I travel a lot of places, and I know that every time I am in Arizona speaking to a group of people or even there occasionally on a sojourn, I never have the kind of difficult fights and arguments with people about the simple notion of freedom, flexibility, and access that you do, let's say, in New York or Connecticut when someone accuses you of being anti, you name it. And Arizona's like, yeah, I really like that idea. There was a different school for my child I found, and that really worked. But then another time there was a different school, and there's just no angst about the notion that you're free. And you used to be called the Wild West, not affectionately, by a lot of people. Maybe that wildness was really a good thing.
Not maybe, for sure. And it's taken us a couple decades to prove it, Jeannie. And I think this is so important. And you've been a great voice on this. And the older I get, and I am getting older, the more I appreciate the importance of doing nothing. So, public policy does not create excellence. It simply allows it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, excellent school leaders are what create excellent schools and excellent next ideas. And the question is, are you allowing them to do that work? Are you supporting it? Or are you in their way? And you have to ask yourself that over and over again, especially in things like, you and I have been involved in the standards and accountability movement. Well, for me and for you, I know, because we talked about it, this was a little bit counterculture for both of us because it is an imposition of, of a requirement of a standard that, well, what if we just wanted to teach this other thing? Well, rock on, but don't forget to teach the foundational things that every child needs to know and then go from there. But even that is difficult for me. And I will say now, in the assessment arguments, that we're having out there, we'll just throw this one out there. Because we take the advice of our best school leaders on what policy they need next. They don't always know it's a policy, right? They just say, well, we're not allowed to X, Y, or Z, and we have to ask them why. Show me where it says that, because a lot of it's folklore, as you know. But if there is something, so for example, high school testing, and I believe we have to, prove kids are ready to graduate, but in our best schools, they're doing that with AP tests, with Cambridge tests, with these really phenomenally good, well-known quality assessments, right? And they said, would you mind if we quit taking this state test? Like, takes a lot of time, it doesn't tell us anything, these kids are on their way out the door. And so we said, you know what, that's exactly right. Let's not do that anymore. Well, we don't. It's called menu of assessments for high-performing schools, but you have to be high-performing. I thought our national friends were going to have a canary, and they still are, because, of course, everybody has to use the same test. You want to ask yourself why? That's so they can do good data research. That is not a good rationale, right?
For student learning. No, it's not at all.
Yeah, so that I have an easier time comparing, Milwaukee to Phoenix.
And why do we have to compare Milwaukee to Phoenix? Because somebody at the federal or state level says, I'm not going to do this unless you prove it works. How do you prove something works when millions of kids are vastly different in vastly different circumstances, oftentimes in vastly different schools, that you can't measure in the same way?
Well, and even, you've already proven that these schools are fantastic, right? I mean, these schools have 100% graduation rate. Their kids are going off to, right? Harvard, Stanford, whatever. And still we're making them take a test that, is really pretty foundational, whatever. Now, I do, as do you, I do think we have to prove that a school is of at least foundational quality. But if it's proven itself for a decade to be exceptional, why are you telling them what to do anymore?
Well, and what you're actually pointing to right now as well is this whole notion, which we believe, and it's now the thing that's on, it's the du jour, it's competency. What you're saying is you've proven yourself to be competent, the school, you students through the APs, through the Cambridges, through these independent, very rigorous tests have proven competency. Why are we making kids, of course, this is the birth as well of the individualized education, student-centered learning.
That's right.
Why are we making kids sit through a really boring 10th grade if they're done, if it's over, they're ready to go on? Likewise, why are we making someone go to 10th grade if they're not ready?
Yeah, so I giggle when I read these dirges amongst our colleagues, our good friends, about how education reform is dead. It's over. Nobody loves us. People are pushing back. I'm like, I'm sorry. What is happening? West of the Rockies, y'all need to come. Because that is not happening. So I just think it is time for us really to reassess and nationally, what is it, where things are taking off? And gosh, Arizona has a long ways to go in terms of quality access for every child, for sure, Jeannie. But as you know, over the past decade, we're, if not number one, we're one of the top three improver.
Mm-hmm.
And so on NAEP, so whereas we used to be down around 35, 38 overall, we're now up around 25, which is no small feat. I mean, kudos to our teachers and the schools that have done this, and particularly the phenomenal schools that not only are they great, but they replicate themselves. They grow bigger. Those are public charter schools, but they're also district schools. We have twice as many families exercising school district choice as we do charter choice, and we've got a million kids. We've got 180,000 in public charters, 360,000 exercising district choice. I mean, so
phenomenal.
It's just phenomenal. And now, Jeannie, we have in Arizona what I've not heard of anywhere else, but we now have district leaders who are knocking on the door of their colleague districts next door that are not doing well, that have empty buildings. Our district folks want those buildings. How's that?
Wow, that's amazing. And that exactly is what was intended.
Yes.
When you said in the early 90s, alongside your colleague Senator Patterson, alongside now Senator, U.S. Senator, soon to retire Jeff Flake, who was at the Goldwater Institute and the Fab Five of Arizona, is when you said, if we do this, not only will they come, not only will students and parents be better affected, but all boats will be lifted. Such an amazing prescription. The brilliant person you're hearing me talk to on the other end is Lisa Graham Keegan of the Arizona Chamber Foundation and a pioneer, the leader, in fact, co-founder with a number of but few other people in Arizona of the education reform movement. Lisa, you're working for the Arizona Chamber Foundation. It is the largest concern organization representing business and industry in the state. What I'm loving about that is that clearly there's a big concern about education and you understand the impact on the workforce, which is something I also think tends to get lost in the shuffle. When you talk about the economy, I always want to go, and education. Like, can we just use and education? It's all connected.
It's all connected. And, you know, Jeannie, I'll tell you the epiphany that we had with our business folks. So the Arizona Chamber has about 500 members. It has a board that's about 125 of, you know, some of the most influential companies in the state, if the most influential. And that board, when we went to them with the idea of an A for Arizona project, which is a major education project, as I said, that seeks to expand the number of very highly performing schools, particularly if they serve low-income kids. The idea that we would ask business people to expand what works rather than to try to fix what's failing was such a relief for them. As Glenn Hammer, who is CEO of the Arizona Chamber of Commerce and Industry, said, he said, look, when I'm looking to expand the economy in Arizona, I generally do not go out to some of the worst companies in Arizona and ask them if they need a mentor. I don't do it. He said, I go find who are the high flyers in Arizona, what's holding them back from flying even higher. Could they somehow do some work elsewhere? Could we get them to expand? Or could we even import somebody who could add to our economic base? And we encourage business people that we should be thinking about education the same way. We have high-flyer educators. They are out there. But we haven't in the past asked them to expand, replicate, take hold of your industry and own it. Because we had given them a different job, right? We said, hey, here's a boundary, here's a geographic boundary, any kid in here is going to go to school here. That is not true in Arizona anymore, thank God. And so now there's liberty for these incredible educators. Doesn't matter what system they're operating in. We keep trying to give them more freedom for the best of them to really play out that role. And I'll tell you, business leaders understand that intuitively. And it's been a lot more fun than that for them than going to them and trying to help, I don't know, all of the dreary stuff we ask business to do.
And fix things, right, and fix things and add money. And that's the other, you know, change I think that we've definitely seen and you all exemplify is it used to be you went to business, you went to the Chamber of Commerce, you said, please, I need a stadium, I need new uniforms for my kids.
Yes.
Now we go, I need great advocates for replicating high-quality schools. What a difference. Go from feel good to do really good is huge.
They have loved it. Yep. And we're so grateful to them because, of course, they use their advocacy power to clear brush for our school leaders. It's a really, really nice partnership.
Let me ask you also, kind of slightly shifting, but not much of a shift to higher ed. Of course, Arizona has one of the pathbreakers in higher ed, Arizona State University, and its president, who I know is a good friend of yours, Michael Crow.
The most innovative university in the world, if not the universe.
It is amazing that, again, another thing that is sitting in the backyard in Arizona that people don't think about, how global, tell us a little bit about what you see happening there and how the Chamber and the Chamber Foundation have kind of embraced this. We'll hope to have Michael on at some point. You know, he's going to be a part of the anniversary where we're so delighted to be paying tribute to you as a key pioneer. But I just, every day, I think to myself, every time I have a conversation with someone and explain what ASU is doing and they kind of look at me blind, I think, oh boy, do you have to go out and see what's happening.
Yeah, you know, we all tease that we have partaken of the Kool-Aid that is Michael Crow, who's the president of Arizona State University. We've been blessed. He was at Columbia, came to Arizona, took over ASU, and really reinvented that university. And really the premise, Jeannie, of his work at Arizona State is, and really if you find a way to listen to Michael, even if it's on a blog or something else, but he says, you know, university systems, we were ranking them by who they did not let in. That's how you became a really highly rated university. If you excluded the majority of folks who wanted in, said, "What? We turned that on its head at ASU. We want everybody in. That's our obligation as a land grant institution." And he has found ways to grow the Arizona State University and its impact using technology, of course, online. What I find most compelling about him is I met with him years ago as I was trying to strategize A for Arizona, and he wrote down on a small piece of paper, you know, quarter sheet, these three things. You know, you need to pay attention to these three things. I put that thing in a frame, and that's exactly what we did. And he's just so insightful and clear and unrelenting.
And really at the heart of why he is those things is that not only did he say we want everyone in, mm-hmm. he said we want you in whether you're online or on ground, whether you're in China or in the U.S., mm-hmm. And guess what? We're not going to compromise the quality of what we're delivering just because you're not standing on campus. And this is also something that I think we can begin to learn in the, you know, those of us who are parents, advocates, families, friends, business leaders, when we send our kids or when we watch the money we're paying for schools that our kids have already left in K-12, why can't we access the best calculus teacher in another part of the world? Why do we have to buy the fact we don't have one right behind us?
Yeah. That's exactly right.
What is that? Is it an apathy, Lisa? Why can't we get our heads around this notion of true innovation requires you to be outside place and space?
Boy, I don't know, Jeannie. I think there's an ownership problem that we have, right? This person needs to only be committed to me and my little enterprise. It's just so much of that, particularly at the university level, where the schools that have broken through that, right, are forward thinking, and now they're distributing these brilliant people to more and more places. But I ask myself the same thing, why? It, tradition, culture, and all of the regulatory stuff that grows up around, you know, long-term practice. And I think so much of that is just what we're used to, comfortable with. And I have to say, living in, you know, the backyard of Arizona State University, it had a huge effect on the other two state universities for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So the ASU, our universities can charter schools. They're one of the only other entities that can, mm-hmm. the state board, and then universities are community colleges. ASU is really the only one that's taken advantage, and they have a network of highly performing, low-income serving schools. Now we're hearing, you know, that the other universities may be taking a look at this now in the way that they did at ASU. I mean, it has a huge effect. And even on, you know, our private institutions, so we have some good, healthy competition with mm-hmm. Grand Canyon University, which, as you know, is very forward-thinking and also highly involved in online learning and distributing with new technology. And so we're proud of Arizona. I've got a lot
A lot going on. And this is coming from a woman with a great Stanford background, who, of course, you know, not everyone can go there, but it's wonderful. And certainly it trained you. And I just have to also add that your background, which I've always felt is fascinating, and there's a handful of you out there that went on to do something great in education with speech pathology. And so you know, tell us about that, because you figured out early on as a speech pathologist that things were not working the way they should for all kids.
Yeah. The joke was, my specialty was brain injury. I had the incredible privilege of working at the VA hospital, and because of my age, I worked mostly with World War II veterans, and what a blessing. Their orientation and who they were was just phenomenal. But a compromised brain still has just massive capacity, and it occurred to me that, you know, wait a minute. You said we are so undertaxed. And, you know, I say that for myself.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I genuinely undertax myself on regular occasions, but the brain is so infinitely powerful that you can wipe out a good section of it, and it's still, it can do amazing things for you. And so the ability to sort of, I don't know, enact your soul, right, is really dependent on this piece of computer equipment we carry around in our heads, and it's pretty powerful. So I became really, really obsessed with the brain and its capacity. I was actually headed to a doctoral degree in neuropsychology at Arizona State University. Thank you very much, because I got my master's there. But then I decided to run for office, and somebody said, it's actually a perfect background, like brain-injured adults in the legislature, and which is funny. I actually worked with people who had a specialty in Wernicke's aphasia, which is people who have lost the ability not to speak, but the ability to understand what they or anybody else is saying. And that actually, that is a good background for politics. It's just kind of this rush of speech that nobody's paying attention
right.
to, including you.
And the communication gap is enormous, not because people couldn't understand. It's because they don't want to hear what the other
right.
person is actually saying. Imagine what would happen if we did. Which kind of brings me to another question for you. We have not talked since the now infamous or famous Janus decision, which is certainly causing the teachers union to pivot in their work and outreach, or we could hope, maybe not so much. AFT's conference is on the horizon, and they're already, you know, discussing, of course, as usual, like NEA non-education things. I know Arizona is one of those states which has been right to work, and this was not as pernicious for you. You did have master contracts, but they were able to get teachers out in force to do what they want. And so there is a little bit of the Arizona educators still follow suit with unions. What do you think we can expect from existing right-to-work states like yours after Janus' decision? What will change, and what did you get from that decision?
Boy, you know, one of my colleagues, Emily Ann Gullickson, who is assistant chief of the foundation and runs AFE Arizona, is doing a lot of work kind of participating nationally on what is the impact of Janus, because she's a former attorney. I think, Jeannie, we won't know for a while, because even in states like Arizona, where you've got roughly half of the states are right-to-work states like Arizona, but all of us are impacted by that law, because the organizations that back them will exist even in states like Arizona, right, that don't practice all of the constraints, right? But as those constraints become lessened around the country, it changes everything. And I think what we need to look for are those places where we have some sort of blockages around personnel and the ability to get the best personnel in and keep them, even in states like Arizona, just due to traditional practice or regulation that grew up and we enacted ourselves. You know, I call these own goals, where we just without needing to, right, we enact a lot of things you would do were you not a right-to-work state. I think we now need to, we can clear some brush here. And I think it's just a magnificent decision for liberty, for the ability of, you know, people to really own, and particularly the professionals who teach and lead schools for us. We patronize them, I believe. We've set them up in a very patronizing system. They don't belong in that system. They need to be leading as professionals their industry. And I just think it's a great opportunity to walk that forward. So I don't know. I think this is a ride we all have to take together and be looking, you know, for the opportunity. There's a lot of it sitting there now.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think that's a fantastic point. And I do think that sort of liberalizing the unions, if you will, it's kind of tongue in cheek, will allow, your local associations, local educators to realize there's not one lockstep. And I think depriving them, frankly, of money that they deprive from other people that they spent to, let's say, oppose charters or line people up against great policies for kids will ensue. Final quick question. I noticed as we were speaking that there is a reporter who is writing for the Arizona Republic claiming that charter schools get way more money than district schools. Of course, I accused him, as I'm wont to do, of not really doing well in math. Final comment. What do you think when you read stuff like that?
I think we're so lucky to have you because it's more effective for you to push back on that than it is for anybody from Arizona. So thank you for that. It's nonsense, and it's this is just all part of something that's going on in Arizona right now, which is highly orchestrated attempt to push back on the really successful genesis or regeneration of our economy in Arizona. It's just blowing and going, and there's a lot of folks wanting to put constraints around that, I include our education expansion as part of the expanded economy. The fact of the matter is that because Arizona was the first state to say, look, charter schools will have operational funding 100%, but it will all come from the general fund, that creates the opportunity to say, look, they get much more general fund money than anybody else. Yeah, but everybody else has a tax base.
Exactly.
They're working off of. So, they do it because they can get away with it, and technically it's true, but it is gross omission and a lie about how much money these students have access to, depending on whether they're in a charter or a district school.
Right, and it's the ridiculous things that people say and do and have for 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
And, again, I just want to thank you both for what you've done all the 25 years I've known you, and I know you've been doing it longer, and for agreeing to be one of our silver honorees at our 25th anniversary. It would not be it's just a perfect, connection, because that's when we met, and that's when you started doing what you were doing and I was doing what I was doing, and those of us who we've been blessed to work with around the country began. And so I'm so happy you're going to be coming down to Miami October 25th and 26th for the big summit and gala and participating. And those of you out there who want to hear and see Lisa Keegan in real life, she's even more impressive when you're standing in front of her, as she is, hard to believe, because she's amazingly impressive when you hear her. Come on down. You can learn more about both Lisa at edreform.com, of course. Lisa's the CEO of the Arizona Chamber Foundation. You can follow them at AZChamberFDN. You can follow Lisa and me, Jeannie Allen, and Reality Check at the Center for Education Reform. Lisa, thank you so much for joining us.
It's such an honor, Jeannie. Thank you so much.
And thanks all for listening.
Reality Check is a weekly podcast produced by National Review and posted on Monday at nationalreview.com. If you like what you heard in this podcast, and I hope you did, you might want to subscribe for free and make sure you don't miss any future programs. You can subscribe at iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and TuneIn. And you can also find much more about education reform, opportunity, and innovation at the Center for Education Reform's website, edreform.com. Don't forget, tune in to Reality Check every week.